A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the GAR. My name is Lee Costello and I'm joined by my forever reliable friend, Niall McIntyre. How's it going, Niall?
Good, Lee. Yeah, can't complain.
That's good. And we're delighted to say that Jimmy Clark has come back onto the show, although he might not be in the best of form. Hopefully he'll still be able to some interesting insights. Jimmy, how are you?
Hey, lads. How's things?
Good, good, good. Jimmy, one thing watching yesterday, and I know we're jumping straight to the end kind of, but penalties and seeing an Armagh team setting up to take penalties and having a conversation with you, knowing your background in soccer before, would you have loved to have been there and taken one?
Obviously, you know, you look at, I suppose, looking at last year and the Galway game and, you know, the irony of it happening again yesterday. You know, there's one side of you thinking, is this redemption? And then there's the other side of you thinking, hopefully not again. And unfortunately, it was the latter, and look, it was one of them things. But yeah, it would have been, I suppose it would have been nice to be on the pitch to hit one of them yesterday.
No, absolutely, and I'd say that they would have been happy to see you as well. It felt for a good while, or in certain stages of the game, that it was going to be an Armagh's day. Did you ever feel confident? Did you feel like this is it now? You know, we're really going to capture this.
I did, because there was times within the game I thought, like, you know, even in the first half, I thought Derry were well on top, but Armagh were still in the game. And then I suppose going into the second half and then again an extra time, that once Armagh got the extra time and went 2 points up, you know, I had a feeling that this was it. But again, you know, there's a bit of both. It's a bit of Derry's fight and, you know, determination to get back in it. I thought they showed unbelievable courage to get those quick fire points. But yeah, again, I suppose it's, you know, there's things that you could look at from an Armagh point of view, that did they really go for it, and did they really turn the screw when, you know, when they could have. You know, I think the chance was there to, you know, to put the foot down on Derry's neck, and they didn't do it.
That's something you thought about, Niall? You thought maybe there were times definitely Derry actually didn't play that well and Armagh could have pushed on a bit more?
I suppose so, yeah, especially with the strong wind that was there yesterday. I know you kind of felt like this, especially like Jamie, when Armagh went 2 points up in extra time, I thought, you know, they've done it and this was it. But yeah, I suppose it was just throughout the game, especially early on, like when they had the wind in the first half, I thought they were a little bit kind of tentative, and I suppose that kind of did stayed going kind of throughout the game, because I don't know, like, I don't remember, like, Rian O'Neill was the only one of their forwards that scored from play, and I don't even remember too many of the others having shots, like, the likes of, you know, Jason Duffy or Mernon McCambridge, like Nugent when he came on. I don't remember any of them kind of coming close to scoring, and a kind of constant throughout the game was seeing Rory Grugan or Ethan Rafferty. They're just two that come to mind, like putting the hand up when they had the ball to kind of, as if to just kind of slow the whole thing down. And like Stephen Campbell was the between Stephen Campbell and Rian O'Neill, I thought they were the only kind of Armagh lads that really took it, as well as Rafferty, I suppose, that, you know, took on Derry when they got the chance. So that was a little bit disappointing, you know, that they, when they had the wind especially, you might have expected more of that.
Yeah, that is an interesting point about Rian. He was the only starting forward anyway that didn't score, or that did score from play. Is there still maybe an over-reliance on him, Jamie?
Like, I don't think so, because, you know, Armagh do have those players. If you look at Turbitt in the first two games, like, Murnin started to chip in, Grugan's, Supi Campbell. But, like, even the decision probably not to start Stephen yesterday, I thought wasn't the best one, because, you know, like, in those big games, you want your best players and your best shooters on the ball. And you can see the impact he had going on, because he was driving through and breaking lines. And, you know, with the power Supi has and the pace, it's just very hard to stop. And even if he's turned back, there's two or three men gravitating towards him, so there's a pass in the back door. But, like you said, I think just Armagh do have a lot of players that are putting in a lot of work around the middle, you know, the likes of your Jason Duffy's. But essentially, when it comes to it, that's the primary job of a forward is to score. And, yeah, it might have been just an Achilles heel for Armagh yesterday.
Mm-hmm. Well, in the first half, it was sort of Rian O'Neill against Brendan Rodgers, and then it went to Rian O'Neill against Shane McGuigan, who's just outstanding now. I mean, you said on the podcast a few weeks ago that maybe he hadn't broke into that marquee for elite level yet, because he hadn't had that one big breakthrough game like an Ulster final or an All-Ireland semi-final. Was yesterday that game?
Jeez, it definitely was. He was unbelievable, really, especially, I suppose, maybe a little bit quieter in the first half. I know he got in for a fisted pint and did well for that, but he was unbelievable in the second half, just coming. You know, you kind of know when he gets the ball and when he shapes up that this is going nowhere on the over the bar. And even when he hit one, the one that ballooned into the sky, and I think the Armagh fans were cheering as if, you know, this has gone wide, and it curled back in. And there then towards into extra time, he was all over the place. Like, he's not just a finishing forward. Mm-hmm. He scored one free, and then 10 seconds later, he was catching the kick out. And he was barely able to move when he caught it. Because, you know, he ran so far and he put so much into it. And, you know, like, he's not just a finisher. He's an unbelievable engine. He gets all over the field, and he left Everton out there, whether it was the 5 points from play, kicked some one unbelievable pressure free there, and then to kick the penalty. And it was the last kick of the whole day. So it was kind of fitting. It was just a heroic performance from him, and definitely a marquee forward, as they say.
Yeah, he did it. He's the main man now in Elsa. His evolution is interesting, because he started out with racking up really high scores as this young forward for Derry and for Slack Neil. And now, I suppose Derry, maybe they'd have been Division 4, Division 3, so opposition obviously not as good. And then last year in particular, you've seen more of his like work rate, getting out involved in the middle of the play. But now he seems to have the best of both worlds. After the game, Conor Glass said that he's the best forward in the country alongside David Clifford and Conor Callaghan. Would you agree with that, Jamie?
Yeah, I think based on form at the moment, like, looking at yesterday, like, to be honest, he was a joy to watch. You know, even as a left footer, like, his left foot is just, his technique's unbelievable. And I think there's a back angle of the free kick when he's on the 45. I think the way he leans back and strikes the ball, you can just tell he's just oozing with confidence at the moment. But there was other things within the game that he was doing, whether it was within those tight spaces, he was winning primary possession. I think he won a free. It was the second half, and he had to hit it. He turned him, and he clipped his ankle. Like, even those wee moments where he was winning all those little battles, you know, they were huge. It wasn't just the key scores, but he was popping up when it really, really mattered. And, you know, he just seemed to be in that flow. And when you're in that natural flow and present under so much pressure, to be able to do that, it was just, some of the point taken was class. And yeah, I suppose you could put him alongside Clifford at the moment. You know, he's a different type of player than Conor Callaghan, but, you know, that array of kicking and striking with the left foot is just so consistent. And, you know, you don't expect him to miss, even though he still sends the ball away out. Like, he has the confidence to actually put the ball so wide to come back in. And to be honest, he was my man of the match yesterday. I know Brendan Rodgers got it, but I thought he was superb.
And like I say, last season he was fantastic and a really key part of Derry's success, getting that first Ulster title and all. But this year he seems to have pushed on even again, you know, and found a new level. Where do you think that is, Jamie? Has there ever been a time maybe in your career where you just felt like you've arrived, in the sense that, you know, I belong at this level or a little bit more comfortable? Is that just with experience or what is it?
Yeah, I think it's just how the game plays. If, like, you're in a system, and it seems like Derry are in a system that's allowing him to excel and perform, you know, whether it's getting the ball inside or coming out the field, he's obviously confident, you know, his teammates are giving him the ball in certain positions. But, like, again, I think he's just in a flow. And, you know, once you hit that peak, you know, in your career, it does go up and down, and you have, you know, days off where you don't perform. But, like, to show up in moments like that, that's what it's all about. And it just seems like he had always kind of, you know, foreseen that this is where he was meant to be and this was his stage. You know, I think he's only 26, isn't he?
Mm-hmm.
And he's in his prime. And, yeah, he's just one of those footballers, I suppose. There were so many changes to the modern-day footballer. And I suppose, like, they would lean more to the Conor Callan style, where you're more powerful and direct, where he still has that David Clifford cultural, you know, that style and that elegance of play that brings people out to watch him. So I think it's great to see players like that still around.
Yeah, he's definitely got that bit of finesse that you're talking about. And then, you know, he's not afraid to get stuck in either. And then you already made the point, his last kick with a penalty, did you see him cramp up just after he scored it? Like, literally, he had one thing left to do and he put everything into that, and then the body shut down on him. Is that a man that's just everything on the pitch?
Yeah, he'd done everything and he'd left everything out there. It was funny that he was kind of waiting to be carried off for a finish. But I suppose, yeah, he was between himself and Brendan Rodgers was obviously brilliant in the first half. He was a bit quieter then in the second half and got the black card. But I think, like, himself, Brendan Rodgers and Conor Glass really stepped up for Derry yesterday. And I suppose, you know, they had three lads, probably the four best players in the pitch were the three of them and Rian O'Neill. So I suppose Rian O'Neill didn't have the same backup that that McGuigan had, I'd say. And yeah, I'd say that was probably, you know, the main difference for a finish. But no, unbelievable from McGuigan, like from start to finish, really.
Yeah, and like you mentioned Brendan Rodgers there, and what a great game he had, particularly in the first half. His goal sort of proved to be the difference in some ways. It could have been an entirely different game if it hadn't went in. Very unusual, Jamie, the manner of it. Ethan Rafferty maybe at fault. Is that, being in that position, is that because he's not a natural goalkeeper? But then he does love to run out and, you know, to tear through boys too. I mean, have you ever seen anything like that goal?
Like, it was misread, and I suppose the irony of it again is with Armagh got a lot of goals like that even last year, and, you know, throughout the championship, was the high ball in, and came from a mishit shot as well. But in fairness to Rodgers, he actually connected with it really well. Like, he came from quite a height, and actually he caught it very flush, to be honest. But I think even after the goal, Armagh still got back into it. I don't think it had an overly, it kind of maybe gave Armagh a bit of a wake up call, because we're back within a point pretty quick. But yeah, like, there's just other things within the game, you know, that would have frustrated me from an Armagh point of view, in that, you know, the game was there, and it was nearly like the approach was to deal with Derry rather than impose Armagh's game, because I personally think that Armagh do have, you know, a higher caliber of player when it comes to their forwards. And just how they're being utilised, you know, particularly yesterday, you know, it didn't play into their hands. And, you know, despite having chances, I just felt that they could have went and squeezed and really had a real go at it, because essentially they're back to square one again anyway. Whatever happened, you know, they're into the All Ireland, the knockout group stage anyway, you know.
So you think it kind of was like a free hit, and if there was a time to just, you know, be brave and roll the dice a little bit more in that sense. You think give Derry nearly too much respect?
No, do you know what it is? I think that the Armagh won it so much, that they want the Ulster title and they wanted it so much yesterday, that emotions probably still took over again, with the crowds, the atmosphere. You know, there was chances that were missed. You know, I know Rory missed one from the mark. Aidan Faulkner missed, you know, one close in as well. Like, there was just chances. Jarley Ogue probably thought that, you know, that goal chance, probably thought that the point would have won it, considering the game was so close, you know. But, you know, prior to that, Armagh had been burying those chances. They'd been going for the jugular. Yeah. And it just seemed that, you know, they were slightly cautious of, you know, getting the balance of staying in the game and actually going and taking it, you know.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad you mentioned that Jarley Ogue point, because it's a conversation that comes up a lot, you know, with the fisted point and when it is the right option to take it. What's your own opinion on fisted points, and are you a man for it yourself, or do you always try to hit the jugular?
Yeah, I suppose it really depends on the angle you're coming in at. Like, obviously, you're coming in at a very tight angle. It's, you know, I think Brendan Rodgers had won yesterday to put Derry 3 points up, and he missed it.
Hit the post, yeah.
That's right, yeah.
But yeah, like, when you're in a situation like that, the way I would look at it is, if Jarley Ogue puts the ball in the net, Armagh win the Ulster title. You know, and I suppose with sport comes that pressure. If you miss, you have to take the fact that you missed and you didn't put it over. But
yeah,
at the end of the day, it's like, what do you want to do, you know?
No.
Like, if it's your moment, what are you going to do?
No, of course. And now you had an interesting stat that we were talking about. Between the 30th minute and the 73rd minute, neither team managed to put two scores back to back. Now, off air, you said that's such an Ulstery thing. I'd like you to qualify those remarks. What do you mean?
just that it was so tense, you know, and that every time someone had the ball, if you made any mistake, losing possession is possession is so key that if you make any mistake to lose a ball, you know, it could be a score down the other end, and it usually is a score down the other end, because it's so, so tight and the tension is so high. And I suppose that's why you can see the pressure that's on every player. You know, they might be a little bit risk averse at times, because the stakes are so high.
Sorry, Neil, it was summed up by that play in the corner. You remember the ball was on the line?
Oh, Lord, the tension.
Nobody wanted to touch the ball, because if it went out for a 45,
yeah,
Armagh could have, you know, got a score out of it and won the game. So it was just, it kind of looked like the whole game stopped in time, and the ball was in the line for, I think it was a good 5 seconds, and it was just like, this is it, you know.
The Derry lad, I think it was McCluskey or McGrogan, one of them, he was just in, it was like a rugby player kind of outside the scrum,
yeah,
and he was there jackaling, and he showed some kind of strength to stay up, yeah, because he was under some pressure.
Yeah, yeah, no, that moment nearly best typified the game, didn't it? Like, just when you talk about the finest of margins, that
exactly,
ball going over the line, and even the referee, I think he just threw it up in the end.
He threw it up and blew it up then. And
I threw it.
Then in extra time, I thought maybe Derry at the start would take it, just from the experience of last year and winning extra time. But when you looked at Derry, you could see how tired they were in extra time. And throughout the game, Derry only brought on 3 subs.
Yeah.
Now, I know they made 6 subs, but 3 of them were lads that they'd already brought off.
Yeah.
And Armagh had made, I think it was 6 subs. So I just thought Armagh would have the fresher legs. And they looked like they did have the fresher
with
legs.
With Stephen Campbell and stuff coming, it really looked that way, didn't
it?
Yeah,
and when they went 2 up, I thought, this is it now. But I suppose, as Jamie said at the start, you have to hail Derry's kind of courage when they looked beaten there at the finish.
Well, this might fall under another thing that you would have been disappointed with, Jimmy, in terms of the stats. Derry were a man down for the start of extra time with Brendan Rodgers' black card, and Armagh only scored 1 point during that time with the extra man. You know, is that just another example of not pushing on, you know, when the game was there?
Well, the credit to Derry as well, first and foremost, on that, because I thought they managed that brilliantly. Now, I know I think there could be an instance with the head injury that was... You know, the referees obviously have to abide by that rule.
Mm-hmm.
Play has to stop. And I think I did see David Goff actually telling the player to get up, but, you know, going by the rules, you probably shouldn't have. But I thought they managed it very well. Now, that said, Armagh, you know, they could have went on. I just felt that Armagh got into the lead, and it goes back to that point where Armagh got into the lead and they probably thought, let's try and hold on here. But the game being so tight, mm-hmm. you can just keep the lead, and nearly waiting for Derry to make a mistake so Armagh could get them on the turnover. But I just felt that Armagh could have got up the field a lot more.
Yeah.
And, you know, once they had possession, if you get numbers up the field, then you can work a shot. And it just seemed like in that period, Derry had the ball for far too long.
No, definitely. And now we can get to the good stuff, which is the penalties. Whether you agree with them or not, they are exciting and they're heart-stopping. We talked about what a good game Ryan O'Neill had. He hit some serious pressure kicks. He seems like he never misses them. And then first man up for the penalty. And I think statistically, the team that takes the first penalty usually goes on to win it, something like 60% of the time. The big man to take it, the main one, and then he missed it. Now, like, it was a fantastic save from Warren Lynch, and he gets a lot of stick going, but he was brilliant yesterday.
Well, he was definitely brilliant in the shootout anyway. Yeah. Made some great saves, because they weren't the worst Armagh penalties, but he just made himself big. And, you know, he was jumping to... He seemed to read them all well, because he wasn't just going to the one side, he was going to different sides. Reen's one over to his left and Aidan Nugent's one over to his right. So he was very clever there. But, yeah, I suppose the shootout, just... Reen O'Neill, like, he'd slotted so many pressure kicks mm-hmm. in the last few years that it was bound to... And even in yesterday, he kicked two or three of them. Is bound to, like, you're not going to score them all the time. And
you have to be human sometimes, yeah.
You have to be human sometimes. And in fairness, the Derry penalties were brilliant. I don't know if Conor Glass and Kieran McFall were aiming to go so high, but they caught it fairly fine, didn't they? Even McFall's last one, he was kind of jumping up like, get down.
Well, it's interesting you said that about Conor Glass, because he said in an interview, I think it was the Irish News, that he changed his mind in the last minute. Like, the cardinal sin of taking a penalty, apparently, you know. He said he sort of just noticed that Rafferty was going across himself, so he just changed it and was like, right, I'm going to go the other way then. I mean, it's like rule 101, Jimmy. I mean, do you have a routine that you would go through without giving too much away?
Yeah, you would. Like, again, going back to the penalties, I wouldn't have... I think a lot of the boys were taking a huge run-up, and it's given... I found that it's given the keeper an advantage. I know David Goff was watching both keepers in the lane, that one foot was on the lane. But I think by the time they were, you know, in that run up, the keeper was out a yard, so it was giving him a chance to read. It was a little bit more predictable. Like, the penalties weren't bad. I didn't think the penalties were bad. But I did think Ryan's penalty against Galway last year was put into that corner. And I just feel like the keeper knew that he was going to do that. Mm. And he had done his homework on it. Because I know you mentioned Conor Glass changed his mind, but he did say, he did reference the fact that they were practicing them. And yeah, like, it is a lottery, to be honest, at times. But, like, essentially you want your best players hitting the penalties. Look, it was the key Oran Lynch, he made brilliant saves. He, particularly from Aidan Nugent's penalty, I think his was right in the corner.
Yeah.
He got across quite well, so it's an awful way to lose. But, you know, if you win it, the drama and, you know, the excitement and stuff that comes with penalty shootouts, it's I think I'd still prefer that than a replay.
Yeah, a replay. There's a bit of, like, it's just so unsatisfactory too, isn't it? Like, you know, both teams put in so much work and have this great game, and then no one gets anything out of it. Like, but.
Many games now as well,
yeah.
You know,
yeah. And I know it'd be impossible to squeeze it in. Just on the penalty, on the goalkeepers, like, was it advantage Derry the second it went to penalties, given that obviously Ethan Rafferty brings so much to the team and positives, but fact of the matter is Oran Lynch is a goalkeeper, you know, and that's his trade. And is it advantage Derry then when it went to penalties, given that he'd have more experience in that field?
Well, based on yesterday, obviously, I think it is. I think last year, I think Armagh maybe had Blaine Hughes ready to come on against Galway, and they couldn't get the sub on in time. Like, he would be a natural goalkeeper. Uh-huh. You know, it is an art, you know, with like penalty taking, it is like, there's a reason you have penalty takers in teams, and you know, goalkeepers are, that's what they live for, is those moments. As a goalkeeper, you want to be, there's no pressure on the goalkeeper. Now, we did pull off a great save, Ethan. But yeah, I just think I wouldn't put it down to that, to be honest. Going away from penalties, I just felt when it went to penalties, I would have said that Armagh, it was Derry's when it went to penalties, but Armagh could have won it in extra time, and they should have won it.
Yeah. Do you think there was a bit of scar tissue there, Niall, in terms of the Galway game last year, the penalties, or how did you feel watching the game? Like, were you confident that they could...
I was never really confident of anything, the way the game was going. I probably did feel Derry when it came to penalties, and Armagh had that, as you said, that bit of scar tissue from last year that might affect Armagh, and sure it did in the end. Just disappointing, but sure, like it's you know, you have to. There has to be a winner on the day, and Derry. In fairness, they barely put a foot wrong. Paul Casty was the only one who missed, so they deserved it.
He probably looked like somebody. You know, he didn't have the best game yesterday, but somebody who has that ability to be a penalty taker. But like Armagh from the Galway shootout so that's two scored out of eight. Which isn't a great return.
No, definitely not. Hopefully they'll get an opportunity to redeem themselves, as long as it's, you know, not against Tyrone. I feel like I should qualify that. Another thing about, like, I mean, penalties are not just these big games, and the when they're involved in these high intensity games where it's super entertaining, and you know, you love watching them when they play like that, and afterwards you're talking about how fantastic the game was and how they were unlucky. But are Armagh in danger of becoming the nearly man, Jimmy? Like, is that a threat that they could be that?
I think it's just, you know, you don't want to let the noise from the outside get on top of you. Like if you look at it, it depends how you look at it. If you look at it now, like, whatever happened going into yesterday, it seemed like there was so much pressure being put on Armagh to win this Ulster title. But essentially, you're into the... You know, they came within a penalty shootout of becoming Ulster champions. Mm-hmm. So people might say, well, Armagh needs an Ulster. I know Michael Murphy references a lot of winning an Ulster to get to the next level and talk about winning all Irelands. But if they're beating a penalty shootout, meant that they're able to compete. You know, the game could have went either way. Now, you're into a group stage as Westmead. You know, you're back on the horse straight away. And, you know... Like there are issues with the competition and how it's actually run at the minute, but that's a different story. But like, essentially, Armagh are back, they're back in the mix, and you know, a win puts them back in control of what they want to do, which it would be essentially playing the latter end of the championship. So they're a top team, and you know, I think given the championship this year and teams that the unpredictability of it all, that there are 6-7 teams that could really win the All-Ireland, and I still think Armagh would see themselves as one that could do that. It's just how they regroup and, you know, perform over the next couple of weeks.
Yeah,
isn't that a bit mad though, that like we're talking about Armagh, they kind of have the chance now, and everyone will see them getting back up on the horse, that they'll get through that group, and maybe Westmead will go out.
Yeah.
Isn't it mad? And Kieran Whelan was saying this on the Sunday game after the match yesterday, that three teams are going through in those groups. Because like, when you look at the groups, I'd say if you asked a group of 20 people to predict these four groups, did nearly everyone would go for the same team that will be at the bottom of the groups and won't get through.
Yeah.
And I just think for the next, that's going to be 4 weeks. The preliminary quarterfinals aren't on until June 24th. So it's the next four weeks that them group stage games are taking place. And it's just, they're just going to be such lifeless, soulless kind of games, because the teams that are expected to win, like they're almost guaranteed to get through. Like Dublin in a group. Yeah. And it's no disrespect to Sligo, like, but Dublin, Roscommon, Kildare and Sligo, like, Sligo are going to be miles up against it in that group. The same with Westmead in Armagh's group. I don't know. What do you think of that setup, Jamie, where it is, where it's three going through? I just think it'd be a whole lot better if it was two going through. Two, like, it's not that hard.
It makes sense, but sure, you know yourself, the GAA don't like doing things like that. Even with the provincials, right, it just feels like, bar the Ulster one, because there are so many teams that are competitive, it's nearly like it's edging out the provincial championships. But it's nearly like if there's a fear of, now I know that the likes of the provincial councils are, you know, have a huge say, but like something has to be done, you know, because like you're going into this group stage now, you know, like it's like many times you essentially have to lose before, before you're actually out. And there's just, like you said, now there's so many meaningless games now that, you know, when does it get going again, and when does the flow start?
Yeah.
You know, like the knockout, it's going to be, if there was two teams going out, then it would add a little bit of a spice to it, where, you know, if it's Armagh or Tyrone or Galway Tyrone, like those games have to, you know, they're going to mean more. But if it's the fact that three teams are going through, you know, you kind of feel for Westmeath, don't you?
Mm. No, that's it. And like, I mean, I can see, I guess what the way they're trying to think of it is that we're going to get football every single week, and it, you know, there should be competitive, at least two competitive games every single week, you know, at a really, really high level. But it is the lack of consequence, isn't it? And teams are still going to do that, still experiment and still trying to peak, you know, that word that Darren always hated.
Sure, like it's nearly less important than the league now. Like Kerry are playing Mayo, and it's kind of, you've been hearing people building up to it as if this is going to be this huge game.
Mm-hmm.
But like, it doesn't really matter. It doesn't really matter at all. Like,
matter, yeah.
No, that's it. And then like, I mean, narratives change so quickly. I know things are a bit doom and gloom in Armagh in terms of like how annoyed they were that, you know, that game got away from them. But if you look at Derry, do you remember after the league final, you know, they were being slaughtered after that league final, and oh, it's typical Derry, they can't push on, they may move on. But now it's a distant memory in such a short period of time. And this Ulster final could fall into a distant memory again, because it's weeks before they'll have to play a super competitive game. You
just
know?
Loses momentum. Yeah. The whole thing.
It's up and down. You know, you have crazy games that got Ulster final, and now they're going to take a step down essentially from that to try and lift it again later on. Like, it is just bizarre. But
well, the other three provinces were, it's kind of just a step. It's the level for them, because it's, that's the way they were.
Yeah, that's true.
Kerry and Mayo were behind the paywall as well, aren't they?
What'd you say?
Kerry and Mayo.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe. No, like, so you don't even, unless you're, you know, you have GAA go, but for the older, kind of, I suppose, the older supporter of the game, like, you know, the probably just used to watching games on RTE, like, it's Kerry and Mayo's on in the championship, and, you know, if you told somebody that Kerry and Mayo are on the championship and nobody's getting to see that unless you are tech savvy or you're, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You're probably not going to bother now, like, when it's not going to be knockout.
Is it worth it? Yeah, like, I mean, they'll probably meet again later on, and that'll be the real game, but
things might show their hand, you know, if they're already through.
Yeah.
You know,
the quarterfinals, in fairness, like, they will be brilliant, because it will be the eight best teams. Like,
geez,
that's the only
thing. The build up to it is something else.
Yeah, like, but we'll be waiting a long time for them, and a lot of duds of games to get through first. But they will be good. But it's just a roundabout way of getting to it.
They're definitely mixing things up a little bit. I thought something was interesting on the Sunday game. Jimmy, Paul Flynn said afterwards, he was asked, him and Lee Keegan were asked, who they think the best contenders for the All-Ireland were in terms of representing Ulster, and both of them actually said Tyrone rather than Armagh or Terry, you know, the two teams that were in the final. Does that annoy you? Is that a bit disrespectful to Armagh and Terry?
I just wouldn't agree with them. I think maybe they're basing that on previous years that Tyrone come through the back door and put a run together. But this Armagh team's different. The Derry team's different. You know, Derry have proven, sure, they've won back-to-back Ulster. So I would say Derry probably, you know, edging as the best team in the province at the minute with Armagh behind. So, yeah, I can see the point they're trying to make. But, yeah, it's, I don't think it was anything controversial. I just think that they probably, you know, from their playing experience, would favour Tyrone's playing style and ability to, you know, to compete against teams like the Dubs and the Mayos you know, from previous games gone by.
Do you think that's maybe a view from just those outside of Ulster and don't watch Ulster football all the time and experience it, that it's your own, suppose, you know, in the last two decades, maybe the marquee name, you know, because of their All-Irelands with the Kerry and stuff?
And it's probably because they won that All-Ireland. You know, it's maybe kind of still hanging in there, but then you look at Monaghan beat Tyrone, you know, it's always going to be quite competitive. And I think the National League always shows that the games are so close. But at the minute, as All-Ireland contenders, you would have to say that Derry are slightly ahead of both Armagh and Tyrone.
Yeah. Well, speaking of non-competitive games, Dublin v Louth, Niall. You know, it's hard to dissect a game. Like, I mean, at the end of the day, I was really hopeful that Louth were going to be able to be more competitive in the match. And I don't know, maybe 13 could have been an unlucky number for Dublin or something, just to mix up the Leinster Championship. But they were frightening, really.
They were, Lee. Louth had a decent start, and Sam Mulroy got a brilliant point to start off. But it was over, really, when Paul Mannion got that goal. That was after 21 minutes. And that was, I suppose, it was a crazy piece of play from Louth for that goal, in that Califf took the kick out, and five of their defenders ran out to the middle of the field, and they all overloaded on this side of the field, all running up after the ball. And I stopped the screen, I was watching this, and pressed pause on the screen, and it was three Dublin forwards inside, Conor Callaghan, Paul Mannion and Cormac Costello, with one Louth lad marking them.
And they're not bad either, then, boys.
So the lads came in, Louth won the ball, Sharkey won the ball, and he was dispossessed, and Kenny got it forward. And, you know, there was just way too much space inside. It was easy peasy for Dublin. Mm. And it was surprising that Louth were like that, because it happened a good bit that Dublin would win the ball, and, you know, they could counter and they could kick the ball forward. And Dublin are brilliant when they're a counter-attacking team and when they have the bit of space for them boys to work to. And we've been giving out about them earlier for not getting the ball into Conn.
Yeah, they were kicking it more.
They were kicking it more into him, but Louth played into their hands that way, and that they were crowding the middle and giving them space inside, and just would have expected Louth to be a little bit, you know, savvier, especially under Mickey Hart.
Yeah.
But Dublin, in fairness to them, they were brilliant. They set up brilliantly under the Louth kickouts. They won nine out of 25 of their own kickouts. And, you know, Dublin broke and destroyed them, but Louth definitely played a part.
Yeah, I mean, Jimmy, were you surprised by how Louth set up? What do you think they were trying to do there? Like, did Mickey Hart see some sort of weakness that he thought he could exploit with Dublin, or he thought that on a final you have to take it to the team?
Yeah, I think a lot of county teams, particularly, you could even see, like, referencing Derry and Armagh, you're referencing Louth, and, you know, I think teams are just even a victim of the process, in that they feel that they have to play a certain way. And I always feel like that's why Dublins and the Kerrys are always the top teams, because they let other teams react to them. And I think Dublin can see that, and the players on the pitch are able to see things happening, and they make, you know, and that's leadership, where they make a decision, where they see situations where, like, you know, they're trying to crowd out the middle, and, you know, they made a decision to keep the three in. So I think it's things like that. But, like, I'm surprised that Louth did play so open, but again, It goes back, did anyone ever really think that Louth were going to threaten or get within, you know, I don't know, 6-7 points? Like, that would have been, even 10 points, I would have said, yes, it would have been a big thing for Louth to get, you know, within Dublin. It's, yeah, I just think the defensive thing won't go away now, because Donegal have proven that it works, you know, maybe with lesser quality players, that teams are able to adapt and stay in a game longer. But, like, when you play the Dubs, who are just so well, yeah, they're just a machine. And I know I mentioned that on the last pod that, you know, obviously they haven't played a Division 1 team, but, you know, I don't think anybody's going to want to face Dublin.
No, it's an interesting point in the whole divisions because, they haven't played a Division 1 team the whole Leinster Championship. They obviously didn't do it in the league because they were in Division 2. And now with the group that they're going to be in, they're going to be against Kildare again. Sligo, as Niall already mentioned, and then Roscommon will be the first Division 1 team. And if you're just going by rankings, you know, really, they're maybe the third best team in Connacht. You know, I mean, so will that catch them out in the end? Is that an advantage because they can go through the gears for that little bit longer and peak or whatever you want to call it? Or will they be a real threat of being caught cold when they come up against quality opposition?
No, I think the games will definitely be a lot tighter, you know, in the latter stages with your likes of your Galls, your Kerrys, your Mayos. And, like, essentially, you have Sligo, you have Kildare. You know, you'd like to think they're going to get through that group. And, you know, if you get to the quarter, if a Dublin team are in the All-Ireland quarter-final, you know, they know how to play them games. The vast majority of those players have been involved in all those games, you know, and so based on the last couple of years, having lost, they will have the chip on the shoulder again. And there just seems to be a resurgence from, you know, you have Mannion back, you have obviously McCaffrey back in, mm-hmm. you know, that there's kind of a resurgence and a desire to go at it again. So I actually think their timing's quite good as well on it. They obviously are aware of the system and, you know, they didn't pick too early. Their objective was to get back into Division 1, and you know they're just coming quietly again. Like Dublin All Ireland quarter final, you can see them that they're going to be there already, and you know, you can't write them off.
No, absolutely not. And we mentioned all those names that are coming back: your Mannions, McCaffreys, Stephen Cluxon. Even no one saw that coming. But man of the match was Bulger. He was fantastic. Actually, and Paul Galvin actually tweeted that he thinks now is his time to become a real mainstay in that team and step up, because sort of struggled to break through initially, Niall, you know, and really become one of the main leaders in the team. But he'd be vital for the sort of redevelopment of this Dublin team.
Yeah, Sean Bogler, he was brilliant yesterday, in fairness, and he was brilliant the last day too. He's an unbelievable engine, and yeah, just suppose it. Textbook half forward, really, in that he has the engine and he's able to kick points and he's a brilliant worker. And he, so many times yesterday, he got back and made tackles and has no problems doing the donkey work. I know you were saying there that Dublin haven't played a Division 1 team, but Shaderi are as close as you'll get to a Division 1 team. True. And, you know, they've played them twice, so I'd have no worries about Dublin that way. I think they're really humming. And yesterday there was lots of signs that they are kind of there. People were giving out about them earlier that they were being a little bit, you know, rigid and sticking to the process and everything being so safe in their play. But yesterday, you know, Stephen Cluxon hit most of his kickouts went long, and when they were winning the ball, they were kicking it in. Brian Howard was kicking it in. They were getting, Davy Byrne was kicking the ball in. They were being fairly adventurous. I think Kieran Kenny was one of the few lads who hasn't kind of started kicking the ball in, but all the majority of other lads, Fenton is always kicking the ball in, Lee Gannon.
Yeah.
So Dublin are, they've kind of changed their style, and there seems to be a bit more kind of enjoyment, I'd say, in the players, that they're playing this more adventurous style, and they're definitely playing better.
No, they're definitely trying to turn the screw a little bit more. But it was interesting that Kieran Kilkenny point. He had an option, I think it was to pass it to Dean Rock for the goal opportunity, but sort of went for a short fist pass instead, and then Dean Rock fisted it over himself, but he was like visibly fuming about the situation, you know. The fist of points, is it's always going to be a cause of controversy, but I suppose at that time, you know what, the game was gone.
I've seen about 10 or 11 of them yesterday, I think.
Yeah.
Oh, in total, I was getting sick of watching them.
I know.
Should ban them.
They should ban them, yeah. You have to go for goal. In terms of just those players that are coming back, like Jimmy, do you think there's one in particular that makes a real difference and makes them look like the Dublin of old, not just because of the name on the team sheet, but of what they bring to the team?
I suppose you would have to say like with Mannion, I would still have to say McCaffrey's threat. And, you know, he just plays with such a carefree attitude that he just goes, he just plays the game, you know, his pace, breaking lines. I think in the modern game, that's the key, like even for Bulger's goal, just that pace and power. It's just so hard to stop. Mm. And a few players that, the more players you have that have the ability to do that, you know, I think the better chance you have, you know, of winning. And I think with Jack McCaffrey as well, even from a halfback position, his second option is go for the point. Like, he'll always be thinking goal. And, you know, that attitude even throughout the Dublin game is goal. And if the goal's not on, then you take a point. And, you know, that again, like you said, that adventurous style of play is another example of the Dublin playing to their own strengths and playing the way they want to play, rather than, you know, if Dublin aren't going to adapt to Derry, now they'll watch them and they'll, you know, they'll try and obviously get into a system that, you know, that will prevent their attacking threat, but they'll still try and play their own game and impose their own game on teams like that. And yeah, just not fall into the trap that is, I suppose, the defensive process that, you know, if you don't get right, then it can cost you in the end.
No, absolutely. Just even on McCaffrey, like a breaking lines, and he's very adventurous, obviously. But then a key part of that is his pace, and he seems to be frightened. Just how fast he is, and the fact that he doesn't seem to have lost any of it either, even being absent from the game for a while. Is there any players in the Cross McLean team or the Armagh team that have that ridiculous frightening pace where it comes to the training drills and stuff, that they're just smoking everybody for ease and you're dreading being paired with them?
I suppose it's not, I wouldn't even say it is that. Like, I would look at the likes of Stephen Campbell yesterday, for example. It's that power over a 15 yard period where you're breaking that line, you have the ability to break the line and get the shot off at the same time. You know, obviously, if you're with Jack McCaffrey out on, you know, your one-on-one, you're in trouble. Again, I think it's the way Dublin's set up that allows players to run like that. And again, it's hard running. I think it's, again, in the modern game, if you don't have three or four players that have the ability to do that, then, you know, I don't think you're going to be able to compete at the top level.
No, absolutely. So we'll just do a quick roundup for the Talchian Cup. Some major sort of shocks, but I think a lot of it's just sort of expected now. Kevin beat Laois, no real surprises there. Down beat Waterford sort of comfortably. It's good to see Down. They didn't get too bottled down with the disappointment against Armagh and Ulster. Meath back to Moonin Ways, beating Tipperary. Your Tipperary team, unfortunately. Did you get seeing it at all, or just
No, I was at a wedding Saturday evening, but Tipperary, they're just going downhill the last few years. They've lost a few lads, one or two to hurlers, and the likes of Conor Bowe was playing football 2 years ago. He's gone with the hurlers now. Bill Maher gone to America. Mm-hmm. A few injuries, and Mike Quinlevin's not playing. He's the key man in Tip football, so you could kind of predict it, and I wouldn't say Meath are back or anything by beating Tipperary. I just think they're definitely struggling at the minute. And the other result, Wexford got a huge result. Now, they mm-hmm. wouldn't have been up in Brewster Park as well. That was a huge result for them. And, you know, they kicked some brilliant scores. The goalkeeper showed, like you talk about Reno Neal nailing the freeze. Dara Brooks was virtually the last kick of the game to level it up, and he nailed it for Wexford, a brilliant one from the 45. And Cathal Walsh kicked it, an absolute stunner off the right foot, off the outside of the boot. Do you know, when they were under pressure, so they clawed their way back into that, and that's a huge result for them. And Carlow against Wicklow, Oisín McConnell will be disappointed there, because Carlow kicked the last 5 points of the game to win that, so that was huge for them away from home as well.
People wouldn't have expected that, especially just with the promotion that Wicklow got and all. And I kind of want to ask you about Oisín McConnell in management. Obviously, that was a disappointing result, but he seems to be doing a good job overall in his first season. He managed you across McLean. What was he like as a manager? You know, you knew him as a player. There must have been a change in dynamic with him when he took that role.
Yeah, we had Oisín was in with John McEntee, and we actually got Castlebar beat us by a point in that All Ireland semi. But yeah, like it's interesting coming, I suppose, from my point of view, Oisín was always somebody that I would have looked up to. So I always had that respect. So it didn't really matter what he was saying, but you'd be surprised with his tactical, you know, analysis on the game. I think the more he you know, he's in that managerial role and the process, the better he'll get at it. Because I can imagine it's not easy to go to somewhere, you know, like Wicklow and take on a team, and you can see the progress they've even made. But, you know, it wasn't a great result for him at the weekend. But yeah, with Oisín, he'd be quite motivational in terms of what he says. And, you know, like you'll always have a nugget, and he'd always tell a good story that you can relate to of some capacity, you know.
Yeah, that is interesting, because he does seem to have like a sort of a quiet, relaxed demeanor. You know, he's on a lot of like shows. He, you know, he worked for RTE in the Sunday Game and everything. So you say he's motivational. He knows how to like sort of raise the temperature.
Well, this is that. He knows how to raise the temperature. And if he's thinking, obviously you play to a system, but if he would have the attitude, if you can't get into the game, go and get into the game, you know.
Yeah.
Like take responsibility for it. So he would, you know, he wouldn't be so structured in his approach.
Yeah.
But you know, he wants you to play ball. He wants you to go and get involved. So, he'd probably provide a platform for the players and the Wicklow players to go and, you know, excel and, you know, try to play with the shackles off.
Yeah, and whether it's on purpose or not, you always seem to be following in his footsteps. He was the main forward for Cross McLean. You became the main forward. He's a podcast star. You're now a podcast star. So does that mean you're going to go into coaching at some stage as well?
I'm wild from that, I think. Despite my age, I'd still battering away. I've the head down. I'm still enjoying playing. I don't feel like finishing anytime soon. You know, the coaching's something that, yeah, I'm into it. Like, I would be, I suppose, keeping an eye on how managers manage and taking all the, you know, I suppose, the traits and, you know, I suppose the learning from them tactically and from a leadership point of view. And yeah, just writing things down and keeping it all for maybe one day that I would take the leap.
Well, there you go. Maybe one day that'll be an exclusive for us. Lastly, it was Antrim beat Leitrim. So Andy Moran's struggling to get back from that defeat against New York. Offaly beat London. And then you have to do a special mention, Niall, Kildare under-20s winning the All-Ireland final.
Yeah, they had a great win. I suppose it was a novel final pairing, Kildare and Sligo. Sligo, they were kind of coming into it under a bit of pressure. They lost their captain, Canis Mulligan. He had a bad shoulder injury in the semi-final, so a huge loss for them. And Dylan Walsh, he got meningitis not long after kicking or fisting the winning point in the Connacht final, and he was unbelievable when he came on that day. They again had a few injuries on the day, so it was tough for Sligo in that way, that, you know, the injuries came at difficult times. But they had a great year, and it was their first under-21 final to make in ages. And Kildare, you know, they were the favourites, and they did. Sligo fought back and came back into the game and looked like they might get them, you know, catch them out. But Kildare were probably they were definitely the better team on the day anyway. They had lots of talented players, and you know, that's their second All-Ireland under 20. They won an under-21 back when Davy Burke was there as well. So, and they were in the final last year, lost to Tyrone. So Kildare are they have the young lads coming anyway.
Yeah, maybe there's hope for the Leinster Championship yet. That's all we have time for in terms of football. Thanks so much to Jimmy Clark for coming on to the show, and we'll be back shortly with some hurling with Niall. Welcome back. We're going to do a quick roundup of the hurling with Niall McIntyre. And Niall, there's really only one game to start with, and that's Clare Waterford.
Yeah, well, it wasn't a good game, unfortunately. It was very disappointing. Waterford just didn't show up, and I suppose, like, everyone was probably, we were expecting that they'd lift it after the Cork game when they were hammered. And you know, their necks were on the line here, and you're thinking this is it for Waterford. But it was more the same again. It was actually probably the worst they've been all year, and the worst you'd see in a long time. only scored 16 points. You know, they didn't score a goal in the whole Munster Championship. They've lost their last 6 Munster Championship games, only won 2 of their last 20 Munster Championship games. So, you know, as we're always talking about the magic of the Munster Championship, but Waterford are definitely, they're letting it down the last while anyway.
Yeah, and then I suppose naturally all eyes go to the manager, and then the eyes are always on Davy Fitz anyway at the best of times.
Yeah, well, I suppose a lot of people, it was kind of half and half. A lot of people blaming the tactics and others blame the players, and I'd say it's a mix between the two that have to take responsibility. Maybe it might have been more common people blaming Davy Fitz, but as Jackie Tyrrell pointed out in the Sunday game, it can't be Davy Fitz's fault. It can't be everyone's fault. It can't be Davy Fitz, Liam Cahill, Park, Fanning, mm-hmm. you know. So it is a mix of the two. Saying that the tactics were, for the first Clare goal, it was especially noticeable how just strange the Waterford tactics were. And it reminded me of what we were talking about earlier with the Louth footballers, how players were just chasing after the ball and leaving space inside. So Waterford got the puck away, won it, but then Clare win the ball back and Waterford only have 2 men inside, 2-on-2, and it's a goal. So just really, really bizarre stuff. Waterford seemed to be kind of clogging the middle and running after their men and just leaving loads of space in behind for the likes of Tony Kelly to run into, Ian Galvin to run into, all the Clare forwards kind of run riot in, and Shane O'Donnell was brilliant. But second year in a row that Clare have just hammered Waterford and beaten them easy. So it's just extremely disappointing for Waterford, because if Waterford had won, it would have really added to the Munster Championship and the whole thing would be split wide open, really. Mm-hmm. But Waterford just weren't able for it, and, you know, Clare were good, but they didn't have to be brilliant.
Yeah, and I do have to ask about the weird bow things that they were doing in the...
Yeah, there was a lot made. Like, it's just, like, what is it? I don't have a clue, really, to be honest.
I thought it was a weird hurling thing, maybe.
I don't know. It looked like they were meditating or doing some sort of yoga namaste towards the, I don't know.
Well, they were very relaxed to it, maybe.
Yeah, look, if they won, nobody would really be saying anything.
Oh, everyone would be doing it, yeah.
Well, I don't know what everyone would be doing it, but you wouldn't be blaming it, but it's just, I don't know what it was, but they bowed down there before the game, and they bowed down during the game as well.
That was nicely put, well done. I suppose, not as surprising as Carlo give Offaly a bit of a clipping.
Well, yeah, like Offaly are already through to the Joe McDonagh Cup final, so they rested, they made 12 changes to their team, and I suppose that was, you wouldn't blame them for that. They were top of the table, they were already through. The Laois manager, Willie Maher, who's a Tipperary man, he was given out about Offaly for making all these changes, and, you know, that obviously would have helped Carlo, but why would Offaly not make a few changes? The final's coming up in 2 weeks. They don't want to give Carlo their full hand. They have earned the right. They're top of the table. They've qualified. So you can't blame them. Willie Maher was given out, but I suppose you can only blame yourselves. You lost to Offaly in the first round. You didn't beat Carlo. They drew with Carlo in, I think it was the third round. So that's their own problem, really. It's not Offaly's problem.
Jake, we'll see a bit of that with the groups of four. I know we're going back to football, sorry, but
yeah, you'll see loads of it, and yeah, that's why that was an enforced dead rubber, we'll say, because but the footballers just making dead rubber voluntarily, so that's another kettle of fish.
Yeah, and then lastly, Kildare relegated.
Yeah, so terrible year for Kildare after winning the Christy Ring last year. They'd have been hoping that, you know, there's something on here. Nace went well in gave Ballyhale a game in the Leinster Club Championship, but just after getting to the league final in Division 2, just everything went to pot for Kildare. I don't know what happened with them. Some disastrous performances, none more so than losing to Down, who had struggled in that competition the whole way through, and Kildare beat by 7 or 8 points, so just disastrous for them. So yeah, the Joe McDonagh Cup final, that's in 2 weeks. Offaly and Carlo, that'll be a good game, because having started slowly, Carlo, they've ramped it up, and Chris Nolan's on form, Marty Kavanagh's on form, and these boys be dangerous. Offaly have played well too. But as Johnny Kelly said, it might be tough enough to bounce back from that one. And sure, looking ahead to this weekend, some two huge Munster Championship games, Tipperary against Limerick and Clare against Cork. So, you know, they'll be huge, and Waterford aren't there. So these will be tight games. And, you know, they'll decide who's going through and who's not. So really looking forward to them now next weekend. There'll be more hurling talk next week.
Oh, good. I can't wait. I know we always make a joke of this. I do enjoy listening to you talk about the hurling, and I'm sure everyone else will enjoy the interview that you've got coming up next with Emma Duggan.
Hello, everyone. I'm delighted to be joined today by Meath Ladies footballer Emma Duggan following the recent announcement of Optimum Nutrition as the new official performance nutrition partner of the GPA. Emma, how's things?
All good. How are you?
Not too bad now. I presume you were doing exams there in DCU up until recently. So, well, did you have a few late nights, or were you on top of all that?
A few late nights, yeah. I finished up there on Friday, so I was doing them for about 10 days or so. So it can be a bit intense for the week, but I suppose I'm just glad I'm finished now. I can relax a little bit more. But I'd like to think I was on top of it, but you know yourself, a little bit of cram coming up to them.
No all-nighters in the library, or yet the studious type?
No all-nighters now. Sleep is important to me now. So I know I had a good chunk of the work done, but coming up to them, you always feel like you can do a little bit more. But I know a few late nights, but no all-nighters, the most important thing.
Okay. And I hope you got a few celebrations in after getting it all done.
Training session, that was about it.
Okay. Well, I suppose, look, that's the life of an athlete. I suppose it signifies really that when college finishes, it's the start of the summer. So, and you know, championship kicking off. So, a bit of excitement in the air.
Yeah, absolutely. Really look forward to. I think this is what you kind of train for, all the preseason, all the rotten running. Really, is for, you know, championship football. And it's lovely that the weather's picking up and really gets you excited, and you know, you can kind of feel the buzz around the camp and stuff like that. So everyone's really looking forward to championship, and hopefully we can kind of, you know, make our mark on it again.
Yeah, there's more of a buzz around training at this time of the year, and maybe less people dropping out with injuries to miss the runs and that kind of thing.
Yeah, you could say that again. All right. I know, I suppose it's much nicer being able to go up to training now, and you're kind of going into a championship game, or, you know, the weather's a lot nicer, and you know, you're kind of going to train, it's bright out and stuff like that. It always makes it easier. But yeah, everyone's really looking forward to it. Everyone's really excited. I suppose this is kind of why you play football, that championship was. It's great to have it back again this year. So
yeah, you had a few niggles kind of during the league and missed a bit with the college as well. And now I'm not saying that was anything to do with the bad weather, or you were dodging the running around, but how's the body now, and what sort of injuries had you?
Yeah, it's my body's thankfully kind of cooperating with me now. I picked up a quad injury in December, and it took the best part of 4 months really to get it right. A few setbacks here and there. I kind of thought I was okay a couple of times, and kind of suffered another setback, and you know, it was obviously very frustrating, especially, you know, I missed the whole of the league, and especially when the girls weren't doing too well, you're kind of just mad eager to get in there and try give, you know, throw your hand at something and try help them out at all. So it was obviously frustrating not to be able to do that, but I suppose the most important thing is I'm kind of back now, for coming into the start of summer. So hopefully I can stay injury free and stay on the pitch for a bit longer than I did this year.
Have you another year with the college as well to play O'Connor Cup?
Yeah, I've one more year of college. So I think, you know, although I missed the league, I think one of the most disappointing things was missing the O'Connor Cup there. The girls, you know, you don't get too many chances at that. I thought I might have been able to get back for it, but it just didn't work out that way. So that was obviously very, very disappointing. You know, it's something that you always look forward to, the O'Connor Cup with the girls, but it definitely made it easier that they'd won it. It was brilliant, and it was obviously great to be a part of that. Even
you kind of had an average enough league with Meath. Is that because you were missing?
No, definitely not. There's a few other things in there. I'm not sure I would have made too much of a difference, but I suppose the league was a bit experimental for us. We're not using any excuses. We weren't good enough. We didn't get the results. We didn't get the performances that we would have wanted. But look, we gave a lot of new girls game time. It's great to be able to, you know, get them used to that kind of level as well. So there's a lot of positive aspects we can take from it. But in terms of our performances, we know we need to lift them, you know, about three notches. So it's great to be able to prepare for that again. But yeah, look, the league didn't go well for us, but we're not kind of dwelling on that too much. I suppose championships coming around, we've bigger fish to fry now, and that's all we're looking towards now.
Yeah, it was always going to be tough enough with, I suppose, the changes at the end of last year and new management team and a few injuries and a few gone away. So do you feel as if, things are kind of coming together now at the right time?
Yeah, I think so. I hope so anyway. And it's great to have a lot of the girls back, obviously. Vicky and Orla are back in now as well, which is great. We definitely had a few injuries during the league as well. So, you know, everyone's staying fit now at the moment. Touch wood, it stays that way. But it's starting to look up. We've gotten a good few weeks of training under our belt as well. We feel we're well prepared going to championship now. So, you know, we don't really have any excuses. It's just about making our mark on the pitch and showing that we can redeem ourselves, I suppose, from a poor league.
I know he's gone now, but Eamon Murray was kind of always a figure that fascinated me a small bit, in that he was very honest and kind of he wouldn't hold back, I'd say. Was that, did you enjoy that kind of style of management where a manager would kind of say how he feels and doesn't shy away from anything?
Yeah, I think everyone knows Eamon didn't really have a filter. So I know it's great. Eamon was a very different character. I think you wouldn't really understand him unless you kind of worked with him. A lot of people probably got the wrong opinion of him, but I can tell you for free that he was probably one of the most genuine people I know. It was great to have him on board, and he was a different character. He brought a lot of sense of humor, a lot of personality, and obviously we've Davey coming in, who's, you know, quite similar in other ways and quite different in other ways. So it's a breath of fresh air. I know it's been great so far.
Yeah. The last ladies footballer I was talking to was Amy Mackin, and I was asking her about her going to the AFLW, and she told me point blank that she gave me the stock answer and said that she's focused on Armagh. And then 2 days later, I see it that she's going to North Melbourne, and the papers are signed. So are you going to say the same to me, or what is your plan?
There's no fear of me, signing a contract now in 2 days. But I think, you know, I've kind of said it before, in this moment of time, I'm obviously still quite young. I'm still in college, and that's obviously a big priority in my life at the minute. And I'm quite happy playing for Meath as well. I think it's obviously a good time that we're in at the minute. I think you kind of just need to embrace it and enjoy it. I don't think I could really jet off to the other side of the world at this moment of time. But look, it's not a no forever. It's just, I haven't really thought too much about it now, and until the right time comes, I probably won't. I'm just enjoying where I'm at now at the minute.
Yeah, well, sure, when you have another year in college, that's obviously probably takes precedence. What course are you actually studying in college?
I'm doing accounting and finance in BCU, yeah.
Okay, so you're good with the numbers. I suppose, is it a lot of the girls, have gone, and it seems like an easy transition to make. Is the professional lifestyle that's in the ladies football, is that something from a ladies football perspective that has, you know, is as professional as it could be? Like, do you enjoy that kind of a high performance setup that's in the Meath camp, for example?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, we are very lucky. We've so many, you know, facilities around us in terms of, you know, you have a nutritionist, you have a sports psychologist, you have an S&C coach, you've, you know, whatever it is, like, it is a high performance environment that we're in, and we're really, really lucky to have it. course, it's intense, but I think the way the game is going, if you want to win All Ireland, if you want to win, you know, these big medals, you have to be a high performance group. And that's something we've kind of brought into our lifestyle in the last few years, is you kind of eat, sleep, breathe football, and everything you kind of do in terms of your sleep, in terms of what you're eating, in terms of, you know, what you're doing with your day. You're always kind of thinking football in the back of your head, and it can be intense for obviously 6 months or however long the season goes on for, but you know, we've been lucky that we've kind of reaped the rewards of it in the end. But yeah, I know it's great. And you know, Vicky and you know, or Lally would say that obviously going over to Australia, it's not too different. Like, you're giving up the exact same time really as you would back home. It's probably just they, you know, they might have a couple of extra physios here, or a couple of extra doctors or whatever it is, but it's really not too different. They're, you know, you're kind of getting a great side of professionalism over here as well. So
yeah, like on that, like when you're practicing, say with shooting practice, like you're one of the best shooters in the game, like was shooting practice something that you would do a lot yourself, whether it's going out to the field with a bag of balls in between trainings, or do you get time in, do you get enough time for that when you are training so much?
Yeah, I think coming up summer now as well, especially when you've more time, I like to get up to the pitch myself in my own time once or twice a week. And then obviously, you know, as a group, we like to try to get out before training and do, you know, 15, 20 minutes of shooting as well. So, you know, you do kind of have to make time for it. Unfortunately, when you're in training, you know, when you're doing the session, you're not going to be as doing, you know, as basic drills as shooting. Like it's all going to be pressurized stuff, or, you know, attack and defense and that kind of stuff. So, yeah, it's something you do have to do in your own time, you know, basic skills like that. So, it's something that I love doing. I love going up to the pitch and kind of looking to improve, especially, you know, when you're not shooting too well, you like to get up and kick a few footballs, get the confidence going again. And like I said, I love going into games knowing that, you know, I've done a bit of kicking the week before, and you just, I suppose it gives you a little bit more confidence going in that, you know, you've prepared the best way you can.
I was watching an interview with you before, and you said you were quite superstitious, and that was one of them, that you try and get to the field the day before a game. Is that still something that you do?
Yeah, I'm kind of trying to leave a lot of superstitions behind me. I've kind of tried to get over that, but that's not one that I'll ever kind of leave behind me. It's just something I love to do, just sharpen up a little bit the day before a game. I don't do anything too hectic in terms of, you know, injuring myself the day before a game, but literally just 20 minutes getting up to the pitch, kicking a few footballs from different positions, and just gives me a little bit of confidence going into the game as well. So yeah, no, that superstition isn't going away anytime soon. And unless I get it when I get a bit older, maybe, and the body can't do 2 days in a row, but for now, it's definitely something I do.
So just maybe the steak and chip superstition, is that the one that could be going away?
I know that's still there as well. There's a lot of them that's still there. It's a bit of a transition getting rid of them. It's just one by one. But I know, like, I suppose food wise, I don't know if that's much of a superstition. I think a lot of people on our team kind of eat the same thing day before games. Just whatever works for you, whatever settles going in your stomach the best way. So that's not something that I'm going to get rid of either. So that's two cemented ones.
Yeah, I wouldn't blame you. Hard to beat a good steak dinner. I wanted to ask you about your dad, like Liam. He obviously played for Port Leash and won a good few county titles. Would he have been like a big influence, and obviously still a big influence in your football career? Maybe hitting the balls out to you when you're shooting.
Yeah, he was ball man, all right. He's good for something anyway. I know he's been brilliant. You know, I suppose since I was younger, he's always been a massive influence on my life and on my sport and career and stuff like that. You know, he's always been a big motivator. You know, he can be your toughest critic, but he'd be the first to give you a compliment as well. But I know it's great to have him there for a bit of advice and stuff like that. Although, you know, times have changed in terms of, you know, there's a lot of tactics going on that, you know, he obviously wouldn't, you know, be in with the squad, and I quite understand. So it can be a bit frustrating when he's saying things and it's like, that's not actually what we're doing, Dad. But I know it's great to have him. He obviously understands the game better than most people I know. So it's great to have him there for a bit of advice here and there. So
brilliant stuff. Listen, that's brilliant. Thanks a million for that, Emma. And very best luck for the year. Thanks to Optimum Nutrition as well. And yeah, thanks for that, Emma.
Thanks a million.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary. Not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.